can hardly hear myself. You'll have to justify. Can you all hear? I hope so. I'll have to go in tomorrow. I guess it's about time I bought a new one. The relic has been around for a long time. So, just to let you know, and I don't think it's really a big deal, but in case anybody's noticed a change in my beard, that is quite by accident. Last night before I went to bed, as I usually do, I was trimming my beard, and I forgot to set the dial. I went down, and I found nothing but bare skin. So I ran upstairs, and Donna and I spent a little time trying to shape it until it can grow back. So it is, anyway, by accident. Turn to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10, please. I am trying not to take the amount of time it would normally take going through these books. Years ago, it would take 20, 25 weeks. I'm picking out the context and the major problems. Chapter 8. And I want you to look at this with me so you get the context. Began a new subject. Now concerning things offered to idols. Now I went through this and I showed you that meat that had been offered to idols was sold in the marketplace. Many Christians bought it with a clear conscience. And many felt they couldn't buy it because it was demonic or influenced by demons. So, chapter 8, Paul sets forth the principle that Christians are free to do whatever Scripture does not forbid. But he's going to take this theme on right through the end of chapter 10. And if you go through chapter 9 and 10. He's going to be building this argument. So the point is that it's important. They're not forbid to do morally wrong if it's not wrong. And he talks about the weaker conscience and the one who has a stronger conscience. And he's really suggesting there not to be judging one another. In chapter 9, he illustrates this liberty in his own ministry, where he talks about the fact that while others traveled and were supported by the people they worked with, and mind you, he does not say that is wrong, but he does say that he does not do it for a specific reason. And that reason is, as he goes into a new place, he doesn't want anyone to be suspicious of his motives. And if you go back to that time, Corinth being near Athens, and a lot of philosophers and teachers coming in, the idea was to present your thoughts, your philosophy, and gather around you a group of disciples. Paul was said to sit at the feet of Gamaliel. And these disciples would follow you and support you. So the Corinthians actually criticized Paul for not taking money. And in chapter 9, Paul said that the other apostles were free. They led around wives. They were free to take it. And he never judged them. But he's gone another step. He illustrates from his own ministry and that he will accept no money from people he's ministering to especially when he starts a brand new work. That makes a lot of sense. As a ex-missionary and a church planter, going into these small towns and making it absolutely clear that our motives had nothing to do with gaining any profit from the people. So we would not even, in the beginning, accept a meal from them. We always stayed in a hotel. Later on, we changed. So chapter 9 has the idea that Paul is illustrating, now, I am free to do many things. I have decided, in some cases, not to use my liberty. So chapter 9, he's going to begin to talk about using our freedom to affect others. America's got a Christian to have a bad attitude. I'm free. I can do that. My conscience doesn't bother me. Lay off of me. Now, Paul is going to say that I'm free to do that. Perfectly all right. But I'm not doing it for the sake of other people. He switches from the argument that I'm free to do what I want, as long as it's not immoral, and he switches it over to the fact that I need to be thinking of those around me and the circumstances of the lives around me. I need to be aware of what people might be thinking in the workforce, in the shop, in the office, where I am. All right? So these illustrate how our freedom affects others. And this is really important. All right? So, Paul is now going to go into chapter 10. And as he gets into chapter 10, he's going to go a step further. A key verse in this chapter is verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. See, Paul is saying, sometimes we use our liberty, even though it is not morally wrong, and we might be in danger and not know it. Social drinking, or other forms of amusement, may create a problem in us as we begin to indulge in them. I'm free to do it. So the Apostle Paul will go on in this chapter, and for us. And sometimes we walk a fine line and may not even know it. All right? So, that's chapter 9. Now, of course, I'm taking a big chunk. At the end of chapter 9, verses 24 to 27, Paul is laying out his own personal thoughts about the Christian life. He's going to run the race with total dedication, total discipline. He is going to fight as a boxer, landing blows. He's going to give himself as much as he can. And you know, an athlete that trains, I wasn't good. I ran cross country. And after I got out of high school, and I thought about it for a while, I realized my problem when I ran cross country is I was lazy. I just didn't discipline myself enough. I didn't worry about finishing first. I finished third a couple of times, 8th, 10th, happy camper. Paul is talking about that. Now, in verse 10, or verse 27 to verse 9, Paul talks about being disqualified. Nothing to do with salvation. It means having live the Christian life and having God disqualify us from a greater work, greater opportunities. Because there may be something in our life that can cause people to stumble. And this is really important. All right, now number 10, chapter 10. And chapter 10 is important, is a very important chapter. Because what he's going to do is he's going to tell us stories from the Old Testament. There's nothing like having a Bible teacher in school, preacher, tell a story, a true story, to help the people understand that, as he said later on, that in this chapter that there is no temptation taking you, verse 13, has overtaken you except such as common to man. We all of us have sinful natures. Now I know we have new nature, but we have sinful nature. And we can find ourselves at times walking a little too close to sin with a little too much assurance that nothing could affect me. And so we may be tempted. All right. Paul's idea is that they are not to be self-deceived. So I'm going to go through this rather quickly. I've been doing that, trying to take the highlights, and I've been enjoying it. So I can put together the context and get the big picture. Sometimes we don't get the big picture. So, chapter 10, the Apostle Paul is going to begin, and he's going to make it clear that there are some illustrations in the life of Israel that apply to us. And I think these stories are very, very important. When you read the Old Testament, don't just read it for historical facts. Ask yourself the question, what is God doing? They may not have lived under the day of grace the way we do. They may have not had the church. They may have not had many things. But God is still working. What is he doing? What is he trying to teach? All right, so the Apostle Paul talks about verses 1, 2, and 3, 4, the similar experiences under Moses. I'm not going to go into detail there, but you can see the nation was brought out of Egypt, and Moses was the chosen leader, and they were identified with Moses as his leadership through the wilderness. And God was leading them in new territory, a land of promise, but they didn't know where it was. This was all new to them. But they were going to follow the leading of Moses. And so they had many things in common. The spiritual food they drank. And God gave them things to eat and to drink. When I said the spiritual food they drank was the rock that followed them was Christ. Some believe actually that a rock actually followed him through the wilderness. He's just talking about the fact that our Lord Jesus Christ was there with authority over Moses. And as they moved through the wilderness, they were being provided. The pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night, the Shekinah glory. All right. Now, verse 6. He says, now, these things became our example to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lust. You go back to the stories and read them. See what their problem was. How easily they were led astray. How easily they fell in with the world. And how easily the world around them convinced them of the properness of certain things. So, verse 6 opens us up. They are examples for us. And they are examples that we might not fall into the same thing. Overconfidence is a danger. We all have to build some kind of barriers. These barriers, as we move up to them, are not sin. They are things we erect to say, that's as far as I want to go. I'm not going to go any farther. Because on the other side of that, there may be a lot of problems. So verse 7. First thing he's going to say, now remember he's talked about idolatry. Talked about idols in the temple. He's talked about meat offered to idols. In chapter 8 he said the idols are really nothing. They're nothing. But in this chapter he will say, behind many of them is demonic activity. I saw a little of that in Columbia, enough to frighten me and to frighten Dick. Knowing that behind some of the things they had erected were demons. So demons are behind it, but the idol itself is really nothing. Okay, verse 7. And do not become idolaters as some of them. As it's written, the people sat down, eat to drink, and rose to play. Now, this comes very interesting. Be idolaters from Exodus 32:6. And if you read Exodus 32:6, you can see in the story how they were led astray. Moses is up on the mountain. And they haven't heard from him. God is instructing Moses about things to share with those people, to make their lives different in the wilderness and in the land. But there's no word, no text phones, nothing. And if you read in chapter 30, chapter 32, I'm going to go there. Don't. But it says that, verse 1 of 32, when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, people gathered together to Aaron and said, come, let us make gods that shall go before us. Let's do something. Let's make something. Had God from Egypt. Things that they grew up around. Let's make something. Even if Moses hasn't been back, who knows if he's dead? And so, this illustration is that they offer burnt offerings. They made these. Verse 32, chapter 1 of 32, for as that Moses, the man who brought them out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him. Aaron should have known better. He's already understood some issues. Aaron said, let's make something. And so they melted all of this down and they made something. Verse 2, break off the earrings which are on ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters, and bring them and we'll make something. So they did, and they made an idol. And then it says they offered to that idol incense, sacrifices, that sort of thing, that were burnt offerings that were associated with idol worship. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, up in the mountains, now the people are going through this. God speaks to Moses and says, the people are dishonoring me with their lives, their lips. Get on down there and let's take care of this, okay? So, Israel in the wilderness initiated false worship. And while they were waiting for Moses to come back from the mountain, what happened? You know, idols, well, we don't have idols. I mean, we don't have statues in our homes like some of the Colombians did. Dr. Jose Gregorio Hernandez and all these others who are supposed to perform miracles. But we have no idols, and yet we do. E.B. Simpson says this, as long as you want anything very much, especially more than you want God, it's an idol. We can want a lot of things, but we find that we are obsessed with it, that it takes us away from our Christian life, our dedication, our service, then that thing becomes an idol. And I know of that. I'm sure you do too. Everyone knows something of that in their lives. So the Israelites initiated this. They have the heart to it. What happens when God is silent in your life? What happens when you don't have a word from God, and you've been praying and things are going on and things are not what you want them to be? We start getting restless. And that restlessness leads us to impatience and perhaps unbelief that God is really actively involved in our lives. And so it may lead us to make some stupid decisions that we say, well, no, they're not wrong. It's nothing morally wrong with that. But later on, we may find out that it hurt us, created a problem. People, when God is silent, do not panic. Trust Him. Follow Him. Let Him figure out what is to be done. I know of those times in my life. Now that I'm an old codger, I can actually speak. Especially when you're on the mission field. And you keep going through the work again and again and again, and it's quiet and nothing's happening. You want to grab methodology. You want to grab all kinds of things. Wait. All right, so the first one is beware of idolatry. Idolatry is dangerous. To give our heart to something else. If we judge on the basis of this, well, it's not morally wrong. That's the wrong criterion for judging. We have to judge this way. it's that stinking time of year again, isn't it? We have to judge this way. We have to judge what is it doing to me? There's too much freedom, actually. Allow me to misuse my time and my dedication. Remember that him who thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. To me, the key verse of the chapter. All right, so the first illustration was idolatry. The next one, back to 1 Corinthians here. And the next one is chapter 10, verse 8. Let us not commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. This illustration is very interesting. Comes from Numbers 25, 1 and 2. Now, you know the story. Balak wanted Balaam to curse Israel. Balaam wouldn't, even though he wasn't a godly man. He just couldn't do it. So what they did, something more subtle. Brought in the Moabite women, settled close to Israel, and allowed the people to freely mix. And before you know it, there were sexual problems. When it said they rose up to play, that is a euphemism for sex. So this led them to a careless lifestyle. And they were abusing this liberty they had. So, beware of fornication, sexual sin. All right. Our culture is inundated with sexual signals. I don't watch TV a lot, but I like to watch it. I have a couple favorite programs. And I'm in the middle of something I'm watching, and all of a sudden there is a commercial for Victoria's Secret. I look down, time to get a soda, time. Not that I'm a prude, but I just don't want to see it. These signals are there all of the time. Some of your best programs always have innuendos or suggestions. Advertisement. Why can't we see some advertisement for something, a car or something, without having to have a cutie pie wandering in front of the camera and making us look more at her than the car? They never show us the car anyway. I don't know what those cars are like inside. And so, beware sexual sin, fornication. And our culture is inundated with these messages of constant gratification. We have made it a thing whereby I think I cannot exist even for a while without it. And if there's a strain in my marriage and there's somebody in the shop or the office who kind of gets close and makes me feel good, it's easy to fall into sin. Christians are doing this. young couples who are getting married and are trying to build a relationship before they were married. So many of them are doing this. One couple I was counseling with many years ago. Can't even remember them. They were involved. She said, why are you doing this? Why can't you build a relationship? Because what you're doing is you're focusing on another issue and you're not building a proper relationship. And I can tell by your tests. Not the guy said to me, because it feels good. Well, of course it does. He's one of those idiots. That was his answer. It feels good. I said, so what? So, beware of fornication. Beware of sexual sin. And go back to Numbers 25, 1 and 2. And read how they fell into sin. And then go to Numbers 31, 1 to 6. And you'll find the reason they fell into sin was because of Balaam tricking the people, making them feel secure, confident. Create a lot of problems. See, we're free, but we should have some barriers that we don't want to go past. I do. Sometimes they change. But I do. And I'm sure you do too. So, Paul mentioned here, first of all, idolaters. Second of all, sexual sin. And when it says that, numbers that they rose up to play and drink, that's something else. How many Christians are social drinkers? And, well, I can control it. It's just a little bit. You know, in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, I went out into the world to look for pleasure, knowledge, to find fulfillment in the world. And he said, I started drinking. You can read this in the first two chapters. Started drinking. And he said, when I did it, I thought to myself, I have control of it, no problem. And then Solomon saw I was wrong. You read that book. All right, so they rose up to play, they rose up to drink, and we need to watch out with social drink. We need to be careful. My dad was an alcoholic. I asked him once when I was an adult, how did this occur? Well, he said, I drank. But during Prohibition, as young people thought it was neat to go out to some farm in Racine, the guy had a still. He drank. The government was going to come and arrest this guy. And we all were pretty well in control. Until one morning, when I woke up with a splitting headache. It was awful. For some reason, I took a drink and the headache went away. You know, it's called the hair of the dog. By taking that drink, the headache went away, no hangover, and pretty soon it was, hey, this is all right. He did know he was now capped. That's what he told me. He didn't know he was captive. And then he began to realize that he needed drinks at night and he needed drinks in the morning and the hair of the dog. And he said, I was hooked. Now, he wasn't a believer, but that's his story. And it was interesting listening to him. Because he, like my Uncle Richard and the other young people in that crowd back then, never ever thought what happened to them, even though they weren't believers. And that's all that happened. Get rid of a headache. Self-deception. All right, next one. Next verse. All right. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by the serpents. All right, to tempt Christ here. Oh, thank you, Fred. Coffee, that'll take. And it's found in Numbers 21, verses 4 to 6. The warning about constantly complaining. Now, if you read that portion, it's just interesting. Neither let us tempt Christ. It's a warning against constantly complaining about God's unfaithfulness to us. And not giving us what we want when we want it. I've wanted things. Good night. I wanted to stay in Columbia. My sound system went kaput. I had to come home. Struggle with things. I wanted things. But one thing I didn't want to do, and it wasn't easy, is I didn't want to blame it on God. And I had to fight through that. Because he said, you made me this way. I've had a hearing defect since birth. You put the burden on my heart to go to South America. This has been happening. Why in the world did you call me? Anyway, beware of complaining. This is in the tense of against constantly complaining. Here's what happened in Numbers 21, 46. Israel blamed God and Moses for their poor diet in the wilderness. Man, sick of this. Sick of the same stuff. Never changes. Tired of it. I want more. Okay, I'll give you some quail meat. They got some quail meat and they all got sick. Wanted to show them something God satisfied their current demands. So, they blamed God and Moses for their poor diet. And many of them were destroyed. And Paul says these lessons are for our good, our well-being. So beware of complaining. It is really important. I'm a complainer. I'm very introspective. I'm moody. I get discouraged. Even though outwardly I may try to be funny. And I need in my life to be concerned about constantly complaining. So they complained about Moses and God, God's leadership of Moses, Moses' leadership. You know the stories how they tried to get rid of Moses, get rid of Aaron. So that's the fourth one. Now the fifth one. And then we'll end this portion. All right. Do not tempt. Do not complain. And then in 10:10, nor complain, as some of them complained, were destroyed by the destroyer. It's really hard to trust God, isn't it? Wait on Him. Believe that He's doing what He knows best. That He is in control. So he talks here about a spirit of dissatisfaction. Murmuring. Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? I made the decision to do this for the Lord. Everything falling apart. Nothing came from it. And you said you were going to bless me and use me. None of it's worked out. Well, that's up to God, but maybe He intends for it to work out. Our first few years in Columbia were really tough. And I spent many a days sitting in the little coffee shop by Emmaus office, drinking Tinto, bellyaching to the Lord, complaining. I'm on the hot sun. Nothing's happening. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm going all the time. And the thought came to me one day, just a simple thought. Why don't you go home? No, I don't want to go home. And change your attitude. All right. So the spirit of dissatisfaction. This is found in Numbers 14:22, and we know what happened. The Israelites were so dissatisfied that God says only the children from 20 years under, and Caleb and Joshua are going to enter the land. So they became disqualified. And we need this admonition today in our lives. Look. Paul then said, verse 11, now these things happened to them as examples. Got this. Written for us. Spend time when you read the Old Testament. Reading these stories, and as complicated as it can be, boil it down to a simple question. What is God doing? What's He doing in our lives? And think it through. So, it's important. Now, verses 14 to 21 talks about fleeing idolatry. How can you be going to a place, eating the meat sold there? You see, now he's changing. He's a little tougher than he was in verse chapter 8. And then go to the communion and eat there with the Lord's people. And share with the Lord's people. And go to the temple. Now, he's saying if one of your unsaved friends invites you to the temple for a feast. They use the temple for weddings and all kinds of things. Don't ask any questions either. But if your friend says, this was just offered to idols, don't eat it. Why? For the sake of your friend. Because he can't quite understand your viewpoint as a believer. So don't eat it. But if he says nothing, make sure, make very sure that you're aware of the people around you, what you might be doing, how it might be hurting them, particularly unbelievers. Now, verse 23. And I'm going to end here. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. There's many things I can do. They're not morally wrong, but they're not always helpful. They don't always help me to grow. Everything is lawful. I can do these things. Some Christians think everything is lawful as long as it's not immoral. That's only taking you halfway there. It is very important to understand, as he says here, all things are lawful. Now the word for me, if you have King James, is used twice in this verse. It's not there, and it's not necessary to be there. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things edify. And there's two things, two words, helpful and edify. There are so many things in this world that tear us down. Politics. The attitudes of the world. And they tear us down. So Paul said there are just two things you want to bring out here. Are they helpful? And do they edify? Can I be built up by this? Verse 24. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. That is where what he was talking about in chapter 8, and he's finishing up this portion by saying, why do we always think about ourselves and our own need and our own freedom? I can't help he's picky. I can't help he's illegal. You need to think of others. It's really hard. So, this verse is important. All right? Eat whatever is sold in the marketplace, asking no question for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord, all its fullness. 27. And if any, and if those who do not believe invite you to dinner, and you desire to go, you can go. Eat whatever is set before you. There's nothing wrong with having unsaved friends and be invited to their house. It may be a good way to witness. But you watch what they do, and you're careful that you do not shut their ears to the gospel. All right? So if anybody invites you, verse 28, but if anyone says, this was offered to idols, do not eat it for the sake of the one who told you. Verse 29 talks about conscience. Conscience is saying, not your own, but for the other. We're always thinking of our own conscience. We're always thinking of our own freedom. Maybe there'd be less problems if we start thinking about other people. Find a new freedom in a Christian life. A new freedom to love and to help, to encourage. All right. Verse 30. But if I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Therefore, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to the Jews or the Greeks or to the church of God. Give no offense. I travel a lot and I go to places that are pretty conservative. And the way they do things is different to Wauwatosa. I'm not going to force my way in the sharing of something because we do it here. I want to know what they do. It doesn't bother me if I have to be more prim and proper or whatever else. And I've been many. I've taken guys from Wauwatosa with me, and sometimes they've been surprised. Oh, did you see the way they did that? Yeah, well, I thought, no, that's the way they do it. And I respect it. Let it be. All right. So Paul ends the chapter, verse 33. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, the profit of many, that they may be saved. Verse 1 of chapter 11 ends the thought. At least most commentaries think that. Imitate me just as I imitate Christ. The next portion that we'll start will be about head covering. But you'll see how Paul is progressing these chapters. I mean, it's really incredible how he's moving through these chapters, building on it, until he brings it down to one thing. I should take the initiative to not offend others. And I must not be overconfident in the things I do because I think I got a good grip on it. There's no temptation but to take that's common to man. All human beings have a sin nature and are open to some form of temptation. I'm too long. May God bless us and help us understand this. Father, thank you for these three chapters, how Paul builds principles from one chapter to the next until he shows us that we need to be more concerned for ourselves, Father, than what other people think. We need to be more concerned that we honor you and that we do not offend people around us. We want our lives to be testimonies among the unsaved. And if they see us perhaps drinking socially, we're thinking it's nothing. We're in control. Father, they may think we're drinkers. Teach us how to give up our rights in situations that you may be honored. I pray this in Jesus' name. Thank you.